Well, I, for one, knew it was a party the whole time.
Yeah, right, dude.
I did!
Then why were you crying?
I was cold in there. I've got sensitive corneas. I told you!
I challenge you all to a duel. Pick your weapons. I pick the mine.
Get out of here, Q! No, we are done with random stuff today. We're not dealing with any of your Q bullshit.
Oh, s'il vous plaît, Mariner. I want to put humanity to the ultimate test.
But I'm not French. No, go find Picard.
Oh, Picard. He's no fun. He's always quoting Shakespeare. He's always making wine.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge in this alternate timeline,
this is Tyler Orton wiping cat hair off chairs.
And we're here this week to talk about the 8th episode of the first season of Lower Decks, Veritas.
Veritas.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah,
well, there you have it.
Latin. It means truth. So you, of course, had that horn of truth that they had to speak through throughout this episode.
Oh, well, there you have it. You learn something new every day. And there I should have really gone there because Star Trek loves their Latin titles.
Oh, I know that. I know it for a fact. Let's not bury the lead here. Q is back, baby, for 2 full scenes. I'm sure John Delancey was walking away with a $50,000 paycheck for about the half hour's worth of work that he put in. I'm sure he could not be happier, especially for all the great character development we got from Q in this episode, Cam.
Totally. And I mean, you know that he didn't even have to leave his house. That's the best part, too.
I can just imagine him literally phoning it in.
I remember, you know, on the Simpsons DVD commentaries, when you listen to the earlier seasons, they would have these stories about, you know, Adam West or Elizabeth Taylor or, you know, these major Hollywood icons coming to the studio to record. And just how much all the writers were just fawning and so excited to have them there. And then you get later into the seasons and they just talk about how they were recording them through like home lines.
Oh, I know. It was actually like a big sort of controversy because you know how they killed off Maude Flanders?
Yep.
It was over a paycheck dispute because she lived outside of LA and she was just like, can you guys just give me like $700 extra per paycheck and that'll just pay my travel expenses from Colorado to Los Angeles every week if you guys want me to record in studio? They're like, nope. She's like, well, I can record at my home studio. Can I just do it there? They're like, nope. So they killed off Maude Flanders over what would amount to, let's be generous here, let's say maybe $7,000 a year that they're making off The Simpsons.
And I mean, $7,000, you know, some people might go, well, that's a chunk of money. But in terms of what a show like The Simpsons is bringing in and what, you know, the showrunners and the execs attached to that show are bringing in, that is peanuts.
That Simpsons is worth $1 billion plus. Like, I'm not exaggerating here. So, I don't know. It was just very silly. But let's get into Q. He's down in his judge's robes. He's getting us to play chess versus cards or something with soccer and hockey sticks. I didn't quite grasp it. I don't think I was meant to because I don't think I'm an evolved human like Q is trying to prove. But I don't know. Were you at least excited to see John Delancey reprise his role once more?
Okay. I was super excited, but at first I didn't even think it was John Delancey because the voice sounded a little different. Like, you could tell he's going for more of an animated character voice than what we would hear on TNG in his delivery, especially the laugh. I was like, wait, is this John Delancey?
That first sentence, I did pause. I was just like, yes, I had that same reaction as you. Is this John Delancey?
I mean, it would be pretty cold if they just recast the role. Especially in an animated show where, you know, obviously actors age, but in animated, they can stay eternally young. And if they'd recast him for Lower Decks of all Star Trek shows, that would be pretty cold.
For a moment, I was thinking like maybe Q would only just appear. We would not actually hear a voice. It'd just be a split second, like, oh, throwaway joke, like a visual and like, ha, ha, ha. I also think that's doing the actor wrong in that situation if they're using his image but not giving him any money to appear on the show.
Yeah, I mean, John Delancey has such a distinct voice that, to me, of course you're going to want him on this show. It only makes sense. But at the same time, when I first heard the voice, I was like, that's different. That's not what I was expecting to hear out of those animated lips.
Yeah. So does this do these moments, do they do Q justice?
Justice is in running around in circles in very little clothing?
That's my kind of justice.
The ultimate justice.
Yeah, kicking over plants.
Okay, does it do justice to Q? Because they have teased Q in several episodes leading up to this. I don't know that... I guess it does in the sense of paying tribute to more of the goofy Q episodes, but if we're looking for the gravitas of, you know, the finale of TNG, All Good Things, or Tapestry, well, no, not at all. I mean, but I just thought it was amazing to have the senior crew dressed in, like, chess outfits.
It was a good visual, yeah. Good sight gag there. For me, I'm just thinking, like, okay, they brought Q for, like, a throwaway joke. That kind of tells me he's not coming back to Lower Decks for some sort of grand adventure, some sort of meaningful Q excursion. Good news, bad news. I mean, bad news is I think we're kind of deprived of a lot of what makes Q really awesome, even though we did get little 10-second snippets of it. Good news, maybe that means that they're saving him for something like Star Trek Picard. At the end, I don't know, we do have Q kind of whining about how Picard's always just making wine. Maybe Q's not interested in Vineyard Picard as this timeline has us going in at this point around right after Nemesis. Maybe it's setting up for Q renewing his interest in Picard now that he's a Gollum or whatever happened at the end of that horrid season finale of season one of Picard.
Gollum Picard.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. Like, I do hope we get more of John Delancey's Q in the future and tied. I think a show like Picard, I mean, I shouldn't even say that because of season one Picard being kind of a train wreck. But in theory, a show like Picard supports the character of Q more and offers him more of the material we want to see out of that character in the development. Lower Decks is always going to do the goofy, colorful approach to these characters. And we have talked in the past on this podcast about how you would use these legacy characters because it doesn't make a lot of sense to bring in some revered Star Trek actors in a show where it's like bouncing around hyperkinetic dialogue and everything is kind of just a punchline and a lot of the characters are made to look goofy in almost every scene. And so maybe it's best if we're using these legacy characters for quick punchlines and cameos like this.
Yeah, and okay, so we mentioned a few weeks ago who would be some good legacy characters. Do you think we'll get at least one more by the season finale, which is actually coming up quite quickly?
I think there is definitely going to be one in episode 10. I think they're going to go out strong with something.
Okay. Yeah. Roga Donar.
Did you know who that was when they dropped the name?
I had no clue. Like, we literally do a podcast every week. We're both pretty good with episode titles and some like factoids. I had to Google him. And can I be honest? I've seen the episode The Hunted exactly twice. That is not an episode that's really stuck with me, and Roga Donar is not a character that's really stuck with me either.
What season is The Hunted?
I think it's season 3.
Okay.
And it involves Beverly Crusher. She's kind of the centerpiece in that one.
Okay. When I saw the photo of him when I Googled it, I was like, oh, I 100% remember this dude's face. But then I look at the episode title, The Hunted, and like one sentence summary, and I'm like, it's gone.
Yeah. I think it's actually most notable because I think the episode is actually banned or edited in the United Kingdom or Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, just because of like connotations with terrorism, etc. I was much more giddy to hear Tendi talk about Khan's thick chest in that very moment.
That was funny. I did wonder, though, about that that very obscure reference to that TNG character, because does this punchline work if, like, literally no one has any idea who this character is? Maybe. I don't know. Like, I'm up in the air. I'm, like, agnostic on this joke. I was sitting there just going like, who? Like, I know that probably means something, but then all I'm doing is thinking about trying to figure out who this is.
I think that I don't like being on my phone when I'm on watching a TV show or something like that. But this made me pick up my phone and then go look it up on Memory Alpha. And so I think it was just a little too obscure. I think what would have made it perfect, though, like I know our listeners are going to they're going to roll their eyes. But honestly, if they said like Vedic Braille, that would have worked. It's like the name recognition is at least there, but he's obscure enough and lame enough that if you're talking about like dreamiest characters, make an argument for Khan with his thick, thick chest, and maybe make an argument for Braille with his brain dead mind at that point.
Okay, I would be 100% in favor of that because I always want more Vedic Braille in the world of Star Trek. But they were talking about a character who had outsmarted Picard. Is there any like villain or something they or an antagonist they could have pointed to that maybe you don't have to sit there on Wikipedia or, you know, Memory Alpha looking up?
Because what about the villain from Devil's Due? The like somebody who came close to outsmarting Picard.
Mm-hmm. I thought maybe Damon Bok would have worked as well.
Yeah, that could have been fun.
Yeah, it's a character that's popped up at least a couple times where fans, you know, may not 100% remember the episodes, but the name kind of goes, okay, I've heard that name.
It'd be amazing, though, if they did give Ronan the Candle a shout-out. We got a Sub Rosa shout-out. Cam, was it not like manna from heaven for you?
Well, you know what? You predicted. I think you said maybe last week or the week after or the week before that, you said, this is a show that can make reference to Sub Rosa, you know, whereas yeah. other Star Trek shows wouldn't. And, well, it happened. It finally happened.
In season one, like... pretend I'm Wayne Campbell and you're Garth and we're doing the we're not worthy you know like waving to the writers of this show for making a Sub Rosa like reference. Listeners, I don't know if you know this, but had the Las Vegas convention gone through, Cam and I's plan was to buy a photo op with the actor. I'm blanking on his name, Cam, but the actor
Duncan Regar, I think.
Duncan Regar, yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to get a photo, and we're going to go to like Walmart during our usual Walmart stop in Vegas and pick up green candles. I don't know if we would have been able to light them, but we would have asked, and it would have been an amazing photo op. But spoilers in case, you know, we're able to make it happen in Vegas next year.
I hope so. I mean, I can't imagine he's that busy, right? He can probably rebook.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. Candles crossed. My wick is crossed.
Do you think they would ever bring him onto Lower Decks?
As First Minister Shakar or as Ronan the Candle?
I think it would be Ronan the Candle they would be going after.
Yeah, I should clarify. First Minister Shakar also was Duncan Regar's character on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Yet another dud for Kira to date.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. But do you think they would bring Ronan onto Lower Decks? Is that too small for them to pay an actor to return for?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do that. I because honestly, who is the joke for? It is for you and it is for me. And that is all.
I mean, I would say you're 100% right, except this is a show that's dropping references to The Hunted. So I'm like, I don't know what they're willing to do.
I know. Okay,
it's like a lunatic asylum over there.
Well, you figure it's possible. I much prefer to think about what's likely. I find it more unlikely than likely that they would bring him back.
Yeah. I really do think, though, we have a chance at maybe like a Wayoon clone or something like that. I could see a character. I could see something like that happening in the future.
See, like Wayoon 45 by this point?
Yeah, like so, and maybe it's even a little distorted or something at this point. I could see them doing something like that in a brief throwaway moment.
Well, one of my favorite lines in the movie about time travel starring Shane Carruth, the director. Why am I blanking on it, Cam?
That would be Primer.
Primer. I kept wanting to call it Solvent, and I knew it was... I knew I would have sounded like an idiot calling it Solvent, but like... Primer, one of the best lines is it's a time travel movie and they keep going into this machine to like, you know, pick stocks, like little petty stuff like that. And the main character is saying like, I feel like a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy, like how much of me really exists. And I think that would be kind of interesting to see like a Wayoon clone that doesn't quite match, what we knew like from way back in the day, like 25 years ago in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, have the character be a little short-circuited. I think that could be fun.
Yeah. So I also, if we're talking about like shutouts, seeing like that museum on Vulcan with all those starships, whether it's the Vulcan warp sled or the Romulan warbird, or I should say the Romulan bird of prey. You had the D7 battle cruisers from the Klingons. I wanted to immerse myself in that museum and just walk around in VR or something like that.
Yeah, again, I've you know, banged this drum a few times, but this is what Lower Decks can do better than any Star Trek show, which is just, again, give us a museum here and fill it out with all these ships from Star Trek canon. That is what I'm really loving about this show, is just the detail. The attention to detail is just incredible.
I feel we've just kind of been poking at this episode around the periphery, talking a lot about the things that we like, but the overall story of it. Okay. I enjoyed it. I think it's probably my favorite episode since the Boimler romance, Cupid's Errant Arrow. But I kept wondering this, especially on my second go around. It's like, what is the arc of this? What is this revealing about our main characters that we did not know before? Where do we get to by the end of the series? I kind of feel it's like one of those episodes where a lot of things just happened. Mind you, there are very entertaining things. I just didn't know what it all added up to storytelling-wise by the very end.
I think this is, if not my favorite episode, my second favorite after the Cupid's Errant Arrow. Okay. To me, what I really loved about it was the idea of no one really knowing what's going on these ships. Because that's something that we've wondered so many times about with some of these elaborate Star Trek stories. That it's like, how does everyone on the ship know what's going on? And I like this as an examination of the Lower Decks crew really having no idea what's going on when it comes to these missions. And the mission's not even making sense. I like that the pieces don't connect whatsoever in the various accounts being given. Like, you can kind of piece together a rough narrative of what happened, but you have no idea how a Gorn wedding worked into it.
I agree. I think that's actually a really good point. I just wonder, have we tread on that ground before, not in Star Trek Lower Decks, but in the episode from TNG, Lower Decks, in which I think that particular theme where it was touched on, and I think it was touched on in a much more deeper, in a much deeper level.
Oh, I don't disagree there. I think that episode is doing something dramatically that it, obviously this episode is not. To me, this is more of a comic showcase, really showing the extremes, because it's like, everything that happens in this episode is just so blown out, you know, to 100, that to me was the magic of it. It was just seeing this as a very exaggerated look at what that sort of scenario is like. And we've definitely gotten that on even just some random episode of TNG, for example, where Wesley's like, what's going on? But I like the idea of an entire show being built around characters in that situation. And this being kind of the example of the perfect storm of no one knowing what's going on and doing it for just pure, like, I mean, this was really chaotic comedy. Like, this episode was just hitting you with all of these almost non sequiturs throughout the episode. And that's not a reference to the Harry Kim episode, but just moments of just inspired lunacy. And it's the sort of like humor that I feel has been kind of lacking on the show. And to me, this was, I think, probably the funniest episode of the season.
Oh, okay. Interesting. This to me was definitely not the one that I put on my list for funniest. I was actually kind of thinking, like, there's definitely lines that I liked, some moments that made me laugh. For me, I would put it on my lower end of funny, just for me personally, though.
Well, that's really interesting. Yeah, I mean, to me, the extended Rutherford scene of rebooting was just maybe the most genius comedic thing they've come up with yet on this show.
Well, I was going to ask you, whose mission was your favorite? Mine, Rutherford's, absolutely. And I'm assuming you're the same?
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was absolutely incredible. And the way that it would just reboot and come up with an incredibly outlandish scenario that could not be explained by what you had previously seen, I thought was hilarious.
Could you ever imagine Star Trek bringing back the Uhura fan dance?
That I could, actually. I did think we were going to be due for a fan dance joke at some point, but I thought this was well done.
Maybe I should have said that. Take away Lower Decks from the equation. Did you ever think that the Star Trek franchise would have brought back the fan dance?
No, there would be no reason to. Although, I mean, if Star Trek Picard season 2 did, they would really get me back on board.
They really do need Hugh to make a distraction as they revive his corpse, right?
That would be amazing. Or Elnor.
Sure. Give Elnor something to do.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I mean, like, I also the security guard who I love seeing him in that kind of old school security guard outfit that we mostly see way back in like the second movie. But he was complaining, I want the regular fan dance. Like, to me, like, that was my favorite moment of the entire episode.
And just like lines like, you're distracting me.
But he's like, what are you doing? And Rutherford is, my best.
I even liked that I didn't even catch on the first viewing, but when they're on top of the cloaked Romulan bird of prey and he's dragging Bill up to safety, and it then his his implants kick in and it says rebooting Klingon fonts, and he's like, oh, why would I need that? And that's when it just cuts out, and I was like, the first time through I kind of just heard it as gibberish in the moment, but the second time it was like Klingon fonts, I was like, that's gold.
I didn't realize he said fonts. I heard Klingon, but no, that's too funny. And then, like, he wakes up at a Gorn wedding at one of these points, which I never thought I'd be able to watch a Gorn wedding in all of Star Trek either.
Well, yeah, it's, I mean, we've seen the Gorn on the Enterprise two-parter in A Mirror Darkly, but we've never really gotten the proper Gorn, I guess, kind of those TOS-looking Gorn since the animated series. The Time Trap, I think, episode. But what a way to bring them back. And just that moment of that awkward scene of him realizing something's going on, looking the two sides of the chairs of Gorn, and then going, oh my God, Gorn wedding. That, to me, totally got a big laugh out of me.
It's as if a Gorn wedding is pretty similar to, say, a human wedding, too.
But isn't that what makes it hilarious? Is that it's in, like, a totally it's like a total replica of a, you know, human wedding on Earth.
The amazing part would be if, like, Rutherford brought gunpowder with him and really, really crashed that wedding hard.
But you know, and then just paying it off with the joke of him blacking out and laughing at them as he's about to black out, and then coming to, and they're still chewing on him.
If that can be a little bit nitpicky, though, and they did bring it up in the show, but just because they acknowledged that they're going with this dramatic misdirect that never really seemed earned, even upon second viewing, does this trial versus party make a lick of sense? And if not, does it distract you from the episode otherwise?
It makes no sense, but it did not distract me at all. I mean, I laughed when they're kind of just doing the hand waving of, look, we respect alien customs.
Sure.
It's like, okay, sure. Fair enough. We can drop them in the pit of eels. Fair enough.
Well, good thing for you, because you can go un-eeled tonight, Cam. That was a great throwaway line. Un-eeled. I just love that kind of language.
And that was Kurtwood Smith there as the voice of Klar. I thought it was great to hear him back. He has a very distinct kind of growly voice, and it was fun to see him add a... This was his third character in the Trek canon, right?
Fourth. He played the UFP president, he played Anorax, and he played a Cardassian in one of the flashback episodes to Tarak Nor for Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
That's right. I forgot about the DS9 appearance. That's right. Fourth one.
I think that was necessary evil, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So. But, I mean, he was having fun, and just, I found, like, the whole concept of this being a party, obviously it's absurd, but I mean, this was an episode that really just dealt in the absurd, and I was on board with it. Like, that's the thing, like, I feel like Lower Decks has a consistent tone week to week, but this one definitely felt more absurd than, say, like, Cupid's Errant Arrow.
No, I totally follow you there. The absurdity that, okay, I might have been a little nitpicky, but the absurdity that did work for me, though, was Tendi's own memories and her censoring herself. And you just have a lot of these gags, and it did not get old for me, where you essentially have Ransom saying, the ROM, Ulins. Like, that sort of stuff I loved.
Yeah, I loved that, like, certain sections were redacted well, and then others were, like, really badly redacted, so it was very clear what was going on.
Yeah, Cam, is it time for us to reveal to our listeners that you and I actually do have matching neck tattoos featuring the Star Trek insignia?
That's right. But it's the animated series insignia.
Fan favorite, yeah, right there. Were those dudes, were they Section 31 or just kind of Black Ops team from Starfleet?
I definitely had the Section 31 thought at the time of watching the episode, but I think it was just Starfleet. I don't think it was Section 31. Although, you know what? Watching this sequence and watching this group do this mission, I really began to think, honestly, like, you know, there's all this talk, or no, there's not that much talk really, but we know there's an ongoing development of a Section 31 show. I just think a Section 31 comedy show might be a lot better based on this episode.
Yeah, I'd go for that. Also, they would have to be the worst Section 31 agents if they literally have neck tattoos with the Starfleet insignia on them. That'd be like a Russian spy walking around with, you know, like the sickle like tattooed onto his forehead or something like that.
Sure.
Soviet spy, I should say.
Yeah. Although, Tyler, I mean, I didn't want to spoil this deleted scene from Season 2 Discovery, but the teaser on Season 2 Discovery was supposed to show Ash Tyler getting a neck tattoo at the end of the black badge.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Wow. I know I've ruined that for you.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, especially since he was hanging out on Kronos with Laurel that entire time.
She has one as well.
Oh, okay. What about their decapitated baby? Is that why he was decapitated? They tried to give him a neck tattoo?
Well, that was a fake baby, but the real baby that is in the monastery, that one does have the tattoo, so it will always have a family connection.
I hated the decapitated baby episode. Was that Saints of Imperfection as well?
No, that's the one where they rescue Culber. It's it has the word light in it, so it's like I can't remember. It's like,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there was two episodes in Season 2 that had the word light in them, I think, and that was one of them.
One was like Valley of Light and Shadows or something like that, I think. But
was it like Point of Light or something like that? I don't know.
There's gone. Also Sound of Thunder. I remember that one.
Yeah.
I know. They're very kind of repetitive. I like how I was bragging about how good we are with episode titles, and we're going back like one season on Discovery and we're at a loss.
It's a pandemic, man. We're all losing our minds a little bit.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
What did you think, though, of seeing Tendi? I mean, this is, as we said, a very absurd episode, but getting to see her be very capable in the field.
I loved it. They keep unleashing new layers of this character upon us. She becomes delightful. Like, we know who she is as a character. She's ultimately, more than anything else, earnest. And it's just fun to see her do this. But do you actually believe she's capable, or that was just her telling a story to the Kurtwood Smith character, Glark?
Well, I think she is. Because does she strike you as a character who makes up stories? I don't think so.
I think she would be capable of it if she believes that the senior crew is about to be dropped into a tank of contempt featuring eels.
Right. I mean, the thing is, he says, you know, you didn't take down four armed guards or something. And she goes, yeah, I didn't. And so it's implying more that it did happen, but she's going to redact it in that moment. So I think it is. I wonder if it would be fun on this show going forward to basically have these kind of separate scenes or Tendi's away from other characters where she's revealed to be like the ultimate Starfleet officer, like known, you know, in the history of Starfleet, but it's never acknowledged by other characters. I think that could be kind of fun.
Yeah. Her own little Lower Decks adventure.
Yeah. I think that could be really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of fun, I sometimes keep saying my favorite line, but I will say this, my favorite line. We do have Boimler making the big speech at the end. He takes the horn, he drops it, and he shouts, "Drumhead."
I thought that was a really funny punctuation on that moment.
Shout out to the best legal episode involving Star Trek.
Yeah, for sure. And that is a reference that if fans get it, it's funny. But I think even if you don't, it's funny. You would just like think it's very strange and perhaps funny to hear a character just say, like, very emphatically say "drumhead" at the end of his argument.
Those are the jokes that I find less distracting, because some of these jokes and references, I'll hear them, I'll like them, but then in my head I'm just like, well, does that work for anybody but, like, I don't know, a couple thousand people in the world? Like, maybe, I don't know, 10,000 people out of millions of viewers?
Yeah, like the Roga Danar reference where it's,
I was
like,
lost.
Yeah, like, I would love to know what percent of viewers caught that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if they're tuning in and this is their first episode.
I also thought it was funny that that Boimler referenced the events of the Infinite Vulcan and Phylos again. So we now have two references to the Phylosians.
Cam, you got to pump up your animated series brethren. What can I say?
I know. I'm looking forward to when they reference some other episodes of the animated series, though, other than just that one. I mean, they've done a couple others, but it really does seem like they're doubling down on that episode in particular.
Bring back Robert April, am I right?
Oh my God. Can you imagine if they did a counterclock incident, like, callback?
I'm down for that. Speaking of callbacks, I think Star Trek goes out of its way to make Earth seem as boring as possible, especially with that great line from Mariner talking about how all it is vineyards and soul food restaurants.
That got a big laugh out of me as well, because that's the sort of thing you and I have puzzled over in the past of how boring it seems in a lot of the scenes on Earth. And just the idea of, you could say vineyard, to me, that is the joke most people are going to get. It's throwing in the soul food restaurant that just put it over the top for me that I just thought was hilarious.
At least Star Trek Picard tried to touch upon that, especially like Agnes Girardi. She's not somebody who had any interest in traveling off planet, and I can get that. Unfortunately, her character kind of got sidelined by a much less interesting, you know, story arc for her, but at least Star Trek was acknowledging that. But still, man, if I lived in this universe, Cam, I would not be spending my time like just chilling on Earth.
No, it seems like kind of a waste of time when you have the galaxy at your fingertips.
I just keep thinking of the green hand our own logo, of course, when you say galaxy at your fingertips.
Of course, yeah. I thought this episode was actually really strong at balancing all of its characters, because we got a lot with the senior crew as well, which often we don't. Usually they'll pick, you know, their two or three lead characters and everyone else takes very major background roles. Whereas in this episode, it felt like every character got a fair amount to do. Even Billup, my God.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I still don't know what his most defining character trait is at this point, but this is a very, very busy episode. As you said, very manic, perhaps the most manic we've had yet. And I followed everything that was going on. And as you said, we got like probably the best ensemble showcase at this point in the series. We're only 8 episodes in, which is just like crazy to think. So I don't know. Look, if they can keep up this pace, I'm down.
If you can give me material like that scene where they're on the bridge and they have to fake their way through it with Captain Freeman, I thought that scene was amazing. I really thought that was hilarious. Of the classic Captain Knows Best strategy.
Cam, if somebody says, send our friends a message, would you not interpret it same way Mariner did?
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking, because I did not, you know, even raise the slightest of eyebrow, motions in that moment where she fires it. It's not until the response that you realize the joke. And I thought it was genius, like, because we've heard that in, I'm sure at some point in Star Trek, we've seen moments like that where they say, send a message. And that's what they do. I thought was genius.
What captain do you think is most likely to say, send our friends a message and mean shoot phasers? And what captain do you think is most likely to want to invite them over for lunch?
Invite them over for lunch. I'm going to start with that one. I feel like Picard as the diplomat is the most likely to do that.
Okay. So Worf would have gotten in a lot of trouble then.
Yeah, I'm like trying to come up with an alternate to Picard, because I feel like Picard is kind of the boring choice to say there, but I also think it's the accurate one.
Yeah. I wonder if Pike, you might be able to make an argument for Pike, you know, like send them a message. Come over.
Sure. Yeah, Pike seems very mellow, so I could see that as well. As for who is the most likely to say send them a message and fire, I mean, that's Sisko, right? It's got to be Sisko.
I was thinking Janeway. I'm honestly picturing Kate Mulgrew's delivery. Send our friends a message. I could totally picture that.
Yeah, you know what? I could definitely see that. I thought of Sisko gassing that Maquis planet, and I thought, well, I could see that. You know, I kind of tied that event with who would be the most likely to, you know, send a message like this. But I do think Janeway's a good call. I also feel like there's probably a moment where Kirk did something like this.
Send them a message and they fire phasers. Okay. I can picture it with Kirk.
especially in a scenario like Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan or something.
Sure. With that thick, thick chest.
But, you know, you think about that moment where he's sending the transmission, right? He's like, here it comes. And then they fire, you know, the torpedoes at Khan. Like, a moment like that is kind of similar.
I got a question that I've been thinking about for a couple weeks. And what we often see with Star Trek is some of their best episodes are bottle episodes. It forces the writers to think creatively, using, you know, as few resources, special effects as they can. And it often ends up with just a lot of solid character moments in which people just talk to each other. I think by its nature, you're not going to get bottle episodes with Lower Decks. But is that even something that we want to see?
I don't know. I don't know that the concept of a bottle episode, as you said, it's episodes where characters just talk a lot. I don't know that that even works into the design of Lower Decks. Like, a bottle episode on Picard or Discovery makes a lot of sense. Magic to make the sanest man go mad. Great example where we got so much out of the characters. But I could see Lower Decks going for and doing a high concept episode like a lot of these bottle episodes are. But I can't see them just constructing a scenario where the whole role is to just stay on the ship and for the characters to talk the whole time. It just doesn't make any sense if you have the animated, you know, the animated form and the freedom that comes with it.
Would you want to see them try?
Yeah, I do think you could do something actually really funny. In the Clerks animated show, which was very short-lived, but actually really funny, in the second episode of the series, it was a flashback episode where all they did was show flashbacks to the pilot. And I thought that was really hilarious. And so I think you could do something like that on Lower Decks where you're doing a bottle episode, but you're also exploring what the concept of a bottle episode is. And you could have characters constantly coming up with reasons to not leave the ship. I think you could do something really funny in that regard.
What if it's something simple, almost like a Starship Mine sort of bottle episode, or a Remember Me, where they're literally trapped on the ship and there's no way out?
Well, you know, you had that tease of that moment with Dr. Tana showing up in like the alternate reality where, you know, the characters aren't who the characters, you know, normally are. I think just that little snippet of that made me want to see a full-length episode of Lower Decks like that, which would be on par with a bottle episode for sure.
Okay. Cam, were you delighted to find out that salt vampires are not extinct?
I mean, I'm always happy to hear that there's more salt vampires out there in the universe just waiting to lure some of our Starfleet heroes, you know, to their lusty demises.
You got to get that sodium concentrate up, right?
I actually thought this was a really good episode for Ransom because you had all of the hilarious stuff with the mission with him and Tendi, which was underlining more of the bravado and the action hero kind of elements of that character. But then you also just had the cheese factor stuff with that salt vampire.
Yeah, no, it was a good showcase for him. Absolutely. he is a character. When do we get to his next layer? Is he an 8-layer dip or is he a 2-layer dip? That's what I wonder.
Do any of the bridge crew have multiple layers? I guess that's the question I'm beginning to wonder. I mean, I think with Captain Freeman, we might see a bit of that because of the relationship with Mariner. But beyond that, I'm not sure we're going to get anything more out of Ransom or Tana or, God forbid, Billup or Shax.
No, I think Shax is probably going to stay the least developed.
Well, other than Billup, maybe. Or do you think they'll develop more with Billup at this point because they can't develop him any less?
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's got to be the latter.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Something with him. Like I just don't know what his defining characteristic is at all. Whereas every other character, I can tell you, without describing what they look like.
Maybe his characteristic is that he has no characteristics.
He's a regular Argyle, right?
That's right. Yeah, like I do wonder if this is a show that wants to explore the senior crew in depth and find new facets to them. I don't know that it does.
I don't know if there's
a point. Yeah, like the show is called Lower Decks for a reason, and maybe these senior crew should always be a little outside of the reach of our main characters. So why would they see a development in them?
How often were you watching, you know, Star Trek Enterprise and demanding that you find out a little bit more about some of those background players where you didn't even get a chance to really dive into somebody like Travis Mayweather?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I could have made the argument for a Kelby showcase. But beyond that, yeah, that's not something I really concerned myself with. It was more like, as you said, why is Mayweather being ignored? Why is Hoshi being ignored?
I was going to name drop Kelby, and then I realized he is a commander. So it'd just be he wouldn't quite be in that lower decks pantheon.
But we all consider him lower decks.
He's lower decks in our hearts.
Honorary. Yeah. Through and through.
I just love how they brought him back in like the penultimate episode of Enterprise just to make us think he's an even bigger loser than we thought by making him a traitor. He ultimately was not the traitor, but they're like, hey, we need a loser, somebody who we think could be a traitor. I know, Kelby.
I really do question whether the writers knew Kelby was funny or like kind of a goofy character, because he comes across that way to us, but I feel like a lot of the traits that we find so humorous in Kelby are failings on the part of the writing.
Well, I think what happened though, they watched those two episodes where he took over from Trip and they realized that, yeah, obviously that character didn't really work at all that well. And then they just keep bringing him back for like goofy stuff, like Bounds, you know, where he's getting like, seduced by Orion slave girls, like that sort of stuff. You know, I think they kind of realize, oh, if we just need a complete dolt in Star Trek, this is our go-to character.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things that I wanted to mention, actually, though, relate to the Klingons. I was curious what you thought of the intro to this episode that made it look very much like the Klingon court from Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
Yeah, well, it's all part of the dramatic misdirect that they were trying to achieve here. And again, that dramatic misdirect does not work for me. It felt completely unearned because it just came out of nowhere. But did it delight you, though?
I thought it was fun more in terms of the execution of the tropes we've seen with like the banging gavel and things like that. I thought the party reveal was actually kind of funny, so that didn't bother me. But in terms of it not being a Klingon thing or not living up to the dramatic setup of that, that again didn't really faze me.
Yeah.
The other thing actually we should note though is also a voice appearance by Kenneth Mitchell, who played the captain of the ship they sent the message to. And it was very fun, I thought, to hear Kenneth Mitchell do a non-Klingon performance.
Oh, I totally missed that in the end credits there. No, but it's great that they're keeping him in the Star Trek family, especially for those that don't know. Is it Parkinson's that he's been diagnosed with, Cam?
No, it's ALS.
ALS. So it's, again, like he's confined to a wheelchair. He can't really go and move around the way that he did when he's playing characters like Cole, you know, back in Star Trek Discovery. So it's great that he can still do voice work.
Yeah, you know, you really feel bad for him because obviously he's got, you know, a very difficult journey ahead. But also with the pandemic, you know, I know he's really enjoyed taking part in a lot of the fan celebrations, like the cruise and the conventions. And for the conventions and everything to be, you know, canceled and everything because of the pandemic, he doesn't have the opportunities to kind of enjoy the interactions with the fans that he was really out there engaging with the fans in a big way at the conventions I attended.
Yeah, no, great that they're keeping him in the family.
Yeah, for sure. I was glad to hear him in this episode. So I think that kind of sums it up for me. I was more positive on this one, but like I really did enjoy this episode a lot. Really enjoyed the inspired lunacy of it all. And that's what was my main takeaway of this episode.
Like I said, I didn't think it was one of the funniest ones, but I definitely would put it in my top tier of Lower Decks episodes. I don't think you need to have, you know, like just zingers nonstop for me to actually enjoy the show. I like the vibe of it. I like the atmosphere. This one totally works for me. I would probably have this maybe number two or number three on my list of episodes for Lower Decks.
Okay, we're pretty similar then, because to me, when we do a revisit, that'll really solidify it for me. But like Cupid's Errant Arrow and this one for me are dueling it out for first place. But I do think I probably at this point would side more with Cupid's Errant Arrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Now, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
It'll be time for the penultimate episode of season one of Star Trek Lower Decks, episode 9. We don't have an episode title yet, but I can't wait until Cam pronounces it.
I am curious if a show like this will ever do any sort of ramp up into a finale or anything, because I don't get the sense we're ever going to do, you know, an ongoing story arc. So it's kind of like, I don't know that they would build to a finale.
It'd be amazing if they've been creating this story arc we had no idea about, and it all had to do with that beam of light that went into Freeman's comm badge in like episode 2.
Is anything going to come of that?
That if nothing comes of that, I'm just like, I've got so many questions for the writers.
I think that was a joke. I'm beginning to realize, because there's no way they can expect
the
people to remember. I have no idea.
It's not a joke. I think it was meant to be something, and they just forgot about it. And now it just lives on as a really awkward sort of moment in the episode.
They have to pay this off, because otherwise it's just a real head scratcher.
Maybe in season 3, if they get the pickup for season 3.
Maybe. Okay, you can, of course, also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Vampires of Salt, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P-O-R-R as in Roga Dinar, O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.